It's the Chai Cooking Corner on 101.9 Chai FM.
And good morning. I'm Sharon Lurie, the Kosher Butcher's wife, and I am here to share a couple of recipes with you for Rosh Hashanah. We've got quite a nice show lined up because we also have Karen Schneid, the award-winning confectionery Ulala on our show. And I'm sure most of you know her magnificent products, so I'll be sharing a couple of recipes for desserts for Rosh Hashanah. I gave out a few brisket ones about 2 weeks ago and a couple of meat recipes, so it's only fair that we go to the sweet things in life. But, of course, if we have time, I'll share another brisket recipe with you, a quick, very quick and easy one. And we'll be sharing recipes also for Sukkot as well and of course, we mustn't forget about Shabbos. So I have a couple of recipes that we can do for Shabbos because, you know, we're getting so organized and so prepared for Rosh Hashanah, getting our tables laid, and then the next thing, oi, okay, what are we going to do about Shabbos now? So I'll be sharing a couple of recipes with you for that. I also have a wonderful giveaway. So stay tuned because I'm going to be asking you a question. And Karen has very kindly given us a wonderful box of delicacies, a beautiful box of Rosh Hashanah marshmallows and nougat. Oh, everything you can imagine. Beautiful. So I think we should start the show off with a recipe, just a very quick and easy recipe for Shabbos. Now, you can, of course, use this for Shabbos lunch if you want to, or you can use it for Friday night. You can use it for Sukkot or for whenever, but it's just such a simple and such a delicious recipe that I thought I must share it with you. And because we are in the mood for reducing, reusing, and recycling, I thought that this would be a nice way to save a little bit and reduce on the cost of things by sharing this recipe with you. And all you would need is 1 kilo of cubed beef, 2 tins of chopped tomatoes. I like the Italian ones, but you can use whichever ones you want. 5 cloves of garlic, and we love garlic. If you want to use less garlic, by all means. 1 teaspoon of sugar. Now, you always need 1 teaspoon of sugar or some kind of sweetener just to take the edge off the tartness of the tomatoes. 1 teaspoon of dried thyme. 1 teaspoon of dried rosemary. You can use fresh if you want, a couple of sticks of each. 2 tablespoons. Now, this is what makes the dish really delicious is actually the pepper. So it's 2 tablespoons of crushed black pepper. For those who don't like too much pepper and they're going to be kids eating it, okay, then cut down on the black pepper. You'll also need 2 cups of red wine. Don't forget, when you cook red wine, you're cooking the alcohol, boiling the alcohol out of the dish anyway. And you'll need 2 tablespoons of tomato paste and 2 tins of butter beans and a handful of fresh parsley. And then what you do is put your oven onto 140. So it is, yes, it's slow and slow, but that's how we want to cook this beef. When I say a kilo of cubed beef, that's off the bone. Okay, so we will fry the meat and just a little bit of oil until it's really lovely and caramelized and dark brown in color. And then you add the garlic, but add the tomatoes straight away with the garlic because you don't want the garlic to burn. There's nothing worse than burnt garlic. So you add the garlic and the chopped tomatoes together with it and a little bit of sugar and the thyme and rosemary. You bring it to the boil and you reduce it and just let it simmer for about 15 minutes. And then place it into the oven covered and you just leave it to cook for about 3 to 4 hours. Yes, you can add potatoes if you want, with pleasure. You can even add green beans if you want. We just love butter beans. So what I do is, once I've cooked it for about 3 or 4 hours, Remove it from the oven. Now, if it's too watery, which it can be, some ovens are bigger than others, some are, you know, some tomatoes have a lot more water, whatever the reason, you can remove the meat from the gravy, the excess gravy, and just reduce it. Just boil it up, reduce it a little, and allow the gravy to thicken up. And then you finally, as I say, you add your butter beans, and there you have a lovely dish. Now, my mother always used to make it with dumplings, and those were really delicious. I mean, that's easy enough to make them as well. You can add dumplings. It's just fried onions, a little bit of fat, and you add a little bit of flour. You mix it together. It's in my book. But if you want the dumpling recipe, I think there is a recipe on Chai FM. So now that's just a little tip for you to make for either Sukkot, Shabbos, whenever you want it. If you want to cook it for Shabbos lunch, then of course you wouldn't put it into the oven on 140. Just stick it straight into your cholent pot with the beans, of course. So now, as I said to you before, after the break, I chatted to Karen a couple of days ago. She was in the studio, and we'll be chatting to her after the break. And coming up after this.
An army marches on its stomach, and so does a community. Join Sharon Lurie Tuesdays at 11 a.m. for the Chai FM Cooking Corner. Come hungry.
Welcome back to the Cooking Corner. I'm Sharon Lurie, the Kosher Butcher's Wife, and I'm sharing recipes with you for Rosh Hashanah, for Sukkot, for Shabbos, for anything. And I chatted, as I said earlier, on to Karen Schneider this week, the owner of the award-winning confectionery Ooh La La. And ooh la la, does she make the most delicious products that you've ever tasted. Now, you can get any of her products at the supermarkets. I know you can get them at Nussbaum's as well. We've got a lovely display of her confectionery, and we've got, I mean, wherever you go, you'll see these beautiful stands with this magnificent array of different products from Karen. And if you stay tuned, she's going to be giving away a magnificent hamper for Rosh Hashanah, and I will ask you a question, and you will phone in on, your SMS line is 34519, or you can WhatsApp us on 061-895-1019. So get ready to hear the question, and let's go to Karen. Let's see what she had to say. Now, I'm sure everybody says the same thing to you, from the legal bar to the candy bars, okay? But her thriving and busy legal firm just couldn't keep her down. And the evidence was actually quite clear. The verdict was out. Guilty of wanting to follow her passion, she enrolled in some of the best patisserie schools in France and learned everything and anything that there was to know about the craft. One of the best judgment calls imaginable. Today, this award-winning confectioner is my very special guest, and I'm so excited to introduce Karen Schneider. Welcome to the show, and thank you for joining us. And I know how hectic you must be, and it's just like Erev Rosh Hashanah. We're nearly there, and you must be going crazy, Karen. Thank you.
Thanks for having me, Sharon. It's a treat to be here. And the truth is, at any given time, if you want to get me to talk about ooh la la or food, I almost run away from anything that I have to do. So thanks for having me.
And a busy factory you've left. I mean, how many people have you got working for you now?
So there are 28 of us now.
Wow. That's amazing.
Come on.
But let's start from the beginning, okay? You did law, you were an advocate, you had a flourishing practice, and then what happened? You decided?
So, it was something that I think I was born with, because I always loved food, I loved traveling, I loved meeting new people, and when it was time to make a career choice in those days, it was law or medicine or accountancy. And so law was something that my late uncle was a judge. And I thought as a child, that sounds great. I'm going to get up in court and I'm going to argue cases and I'm going to make lots of money and then I can do anything. And so that was all I thought. I didn't think ever that I could actually turn a hobby or something that I was loved into a business. But actually, I had the most wonderful 17 years at the bar. It was really, when I look back, Sharon, and I'm so thankful to the world I was in. I was with my closest friends to this day. My closest friends are advocates and judges. And yes. I'm so much a part of where I am now because you work for yourself as an advocate. It's an amazing profession. You are stimulated. You've got great cases. You work with attorneys. You get to stand up in court and argue and have that adrenaline rush through your body, which is, it's indescribable, actually. And it's something, it was a great profession. And because advocates work for themselves, as opposed to attorneys in a firm, you get a lot of eccentric people at the bar, all of which I love. There's so many of my friends. You're able to really be yourself. So, a lot of people have got hobbies and, outside of the bar, but it wasn't something that you'd follow as a profession.
Yeah. So just something to sort of go out and just, whew, a little bit of time out from
exactly.
that hectic schedule.
So when I'd go, for example, to court cases to London, and I loved it. It was incredible. It was an incredible experience, and I love my work as well. But then, of course, when court was adjourned, I was out of there. I remember sometimes we'd arrange with the clients to meet for drinks, discuss the case later in the early evening, and I would say, well, I think I'm just going to maybe sort of meet you guys all tomorrow. And I would get on the channel to go to Paris, and I'd literally go for the night.
Wow.
So I couldn't, it already was, it was just in my blood.
Yeah.
So, of course, as time went on, this passion of mine, which started actually with my children's parties, when my kids were born, it became a creative outlet that I would do these parties for them, which were about countries. They ended up being about countries. So one was France, one was Spain, one was Russia, one was Venice. And in this way, I would be able to take my kids, travel with them, teach them about a world, and then bring this world back to their friends and to a party. And
wow.
So that was the creative outlet. So yes. It was already starting with my kids' world and with traveling and in creating things. And then one of the parties actually was a French party, and being a cook and a foodie, there was no way I was going to be buying this suite. So it was just an opportunity to start creating. And so this is what happened. And going back to many years ago, just before David, my husband, and I got married, we were in Provence. And I was just the happiest person in the whole world. It was just exactly the place that made me happy. And there was a little confection, which you know about now, the Calisson, which I fell in love with. And I... over the years, I just loved it, and I one day thought, well, I'm a foodie, I'm an advocate, surely I can work out how to make this just for myself. But it was never meant to be a business. And that, of course, was the beginning of this world. So I had the opportunity as an advocate to travel. I worked for myself. I could work hard. I could play hard. And at any given opportunity, off I'd go, my family in tow. We would rent a house in Provence, and I would be able to go to spend time in the little factories with the grannies and grandparents who had these recipes that they've been making for like hundreds of years.
Yes.
And luckily I spoke French.
I was just going to say, how did you communicate?
Very lucky. It was just something.
Did you learn French at school?
I did. I was already a Francophile when I was a child. I don't know know why. Everyone went on Orpan and I went to France.
Okay, so you've been going there for many years.
Exactly. There was some attraction there, yes, already since I was a child. I think it was there. In fact, I do remember one thing, at one point in time, I was actually with my parents. When I was a child, we were visiting their friends in Nice. It was like in the countryside of Nice. And their daughter, Katia, said to me, okay, tomorrow morning, Karen, we're going to wake up very early. You're going to come with me to the boulangerie, to the bakery. So yes, I felt great. And I just looked up to her so much. And I went to the bakery with her. And I saw all the people from the village so seriously choosing their bread for the day. And I looked at them and I just saw such a passion that we don't really know about it. We bought bread or whatever, and it's, yes, you maybe make it last a day or two. There, you wouldn't, no self-respecting French person would ever eat the bread the next day. And it's their lifestyle. But their lifestyle was intermingled with meeting other people in the village and speaking to the baker. You know, the same, yes, as maybe going to the butcher and having a relationship with the butcher.
Right.
And so that really appealed to me, their way of life and the way they treated food. And you know, so,
yes,
it was already there, as I say, so from a young child.
From a young child.
Yeah. Yeah.
Fantastic.
And so it was going from being an advocate to a confectioner actually wasn't really a move in itself. So I never really left the bar. So my name's still up on the board, and it's just that, yes, I now don't have time to take on any cases. But I couldn't actually really leave, because it wasn't really like I was leaving something that I didn't like. A lot of people will say they were a lawyer, an accountant, and they hated it, and then they found something they followed. I actually, yes, loved being an advocate, but, yes, this I just loved so much, so much more. I went to bed at night with my cookbooks, so I didn't go to, yes, bed at night with my law books.
Yes.
And so it was in the beginning, I started the factory where there was one person in my kitchen, and I'm still in court full day, and then it grew to 5 people in the kitchen.
And is all in your home?
This is all in my home.
In your kitchen.
It's in,
okay,
my kitchen. So Sharon, my kids would come home at, it was just a busy place. The kitchen was full of people cooking. There was caramel boiling. There were packers in every single corner. It just overtook the house, actually. Yes. And then by about 5 o'clock, it just turned back into home. It was like nothing had ever happened.
yes.
And so it happened that one day I was in court. I mean, I always talk about the story, but it just was such a point in time that I was sitting in the appellate division with this huge case. You know, the appellate division is something that you, as an advocate, it's kind of one of the highlights of your career. It's really like a prestigious place to be.
Right.
And you're not in front of one judge like you would normally be in like the High Court. You're now in front of 5 judges because it's now on appeal.
Right.
And 5 of the most eminent judges. And I was sitting there and my mind kept wandering to another flavor of marshmallow. And I was and luckily, I always say, luckily, we still won the case. But yeah. I knew I've got to give this my whole heart.
An army marches on its stomach, and so does a community. Join Sharon Lurie Tuesdays at 11 a.m. for the Chai FM Cooking Corner. Come hungry.
Welcome back to the Cooking Corner. I'm Sharon Lurie, the kosher butcher's wife, and we were chatting to Karen Schnard, and when she said to me, here's some samples, I want you to try them, I thought, this is, I've got to make an ice cream out of this. I mean, there's just no two ways about it. So this is what we did. And boy, was it a winner. We made it on Friday night and there wasn't a drop left. So what you will need is 1 packet of the Parv Pebbles. So it's the Ulala Parv Pebbles, they're called Parv Pebbles, you'll see them there. 1 packet of Spanish Turon, which is a crunchy honey and roasted almond nougat tort. Ooh, it's too delicious. 1 packet of the Ulala Pecanut Brittle. And It has such a delicious taste. In fact, you cannot, I don't believe you can tell the difference between the milchik or the parav pecan nut brittle. You'll need one packet of the nut nougat and a packet of the calissons, which are, you don't have to, that's optional, but they're lovely and they look very pretty and decorative on top of your ice cream. It's actually a unique blend of ground almonds, and it's like got a homemade candied fruit in the middle and a beautiful royal icing. Oh, they're just delicious. So what you'd also need for the ice cream section, we need 2 cups of Rich's creamer, 1 teaspoon of vanilla essence, 1/3 cup of icing sugar, and a tin, the 400 ml tin of coconut cream. Now, you can go the whole custard route with warming up everything and that, but I didn't. I just did it quite simply, and it worked out beautifully without warming anything up. So what I did with the ice cream was I beat the cream, the 2 cups of Rich's cream, with vanilla essence and icing sugar until it was firm. Then I added the coconut cream and I continued beating. And then what we did was I crushed all of the ooh-la-la ingredients, the pebbles, the nougat, the brittle, everything. And I crushed it with something heavy, like a rolling pin. I used that. You can pulse it in a food processor, but I just find that you don't have enough control over it in a food processor. And sometimes it can make the brittle a little too powdery. So using a rolling pin, I found it a lot easier because I had more control over the size of pieces that I wanted to use. And all you have to do is just ensure that they, you know, you've chopped them up. They don't have to be uniform. They can just be roughly chopped and a little smaller than a mouthful size. And remember that if the nougat that I got was just crushed up quite easily. It was delicious. But if you want to, you can put it in the freezer and then just chop it up later. But it must be very small because otherwise it can be a bit hard and chewy in the ice cream. And then I just combined all those ingredients, all the beautiful, except the calissons, which I used at the end for decorating. But I just combined the nougat, the brittle, and the honey roasted almonds and the pur of pebbles and everything, combined them all. And I kept put half in the ice cream. And then I kept the other half in a plastic bag and I put that into the freezer. And then I mixed that into the ice cream. And then what I did was you can either put it into a freezer proof dish that you're actually going to present it in, or you can put it in a large loaf or large cake tin. But something that where the cake will, you know, you'll be able to remove the ice cream easily when you turn it upside down onto a platter. And remember that because it's homemade ice cream, remove it from the freezer. Trust me on this one. Remove from the freezer about 10 to 15 minutes before you're going to actually serve it. And then I turned it out, turned my loaf tin upside down, put it onto a beautiful platter, and it's slipped out beautifully. If you have a problem, just take a little bit of warm water on a cloth and just sort of wipe the tin and it will slip out. And then I sprinkled it with the beautiful nuts and the brittle and all the decorations. I put a little rose on the side. I put the calissons across the top. And that was it. And it was absolutely delicious. It was creamy. It was crunchy. The crunchy bits and the brittle were still crunchy and stayed crunchy for a few days. And that was the simple recipe. So let's go back to Karen and continue our chat with her. I'm sitting here looking at this gorgeous, thin, beautiful, elegant lady. And to think that her whole business is sugar. Now, With sugar having such a bad rap lately, I mean, everything is don't touch sugar. I mean, that hasn't affected you in any way. Are you looking for alternative routes or I want the pure thing and that's it?
So I have a specific attitude which I've always had and I stuck to, and that is to have things natural with no preservatives, no added colors. And so for me, sugar in its purest form, which comes from cane, or that's not the problem. The problem is when people are eating things that are mass-produced. They've got so many other things in them. But for me, when I look at the ingredients that go into my confectionery, my kids can have as much as they want. So there's no way that I would ever eat a mass-produced product. I never eat anything with preservatives. So I'm very careful, but I know what goes into this. So it's only what, you know, you'd think of your grandmother cooking. It's real butter. It's real cream. It's nothing processed. So that's my attitude. And so it worked for me.
What does nougat actually contain? What is it made of?
So nougat is actually made mostly with egg white and honey and nuts. And it's all about the temperature.
Right. And marshmallows?
So marshmallows are also made with egg white, made with honey. We actually, it's very interesting, we use marshmallow root, real marshmallow root in our marshmallows. Now, people don't. No, people have forgotten. Well, it was many years ago in the Egyptian days where the marshmallow root was used actually to soothe sore throats. It comes from like a marshy area, and that's why marshmallows are called marshmallows. It comes from a root.
Okay, that's interesting.
Over the years, that wasn't used anymore. It was then turned into your jet puffed supermarket variety that people see. And so now we've gone back to making things the real original way. So we actually use the marshmallow root. So, when we use licorice, for example, in our chocolate, there's no flavor there. Use the real licorice root. They're the roots. I buy them when I'm in France, and we make them into the powder. So there's nothing artificial.
That's amazing. Yeah. And are you able to get quite a lot of ingredients in South Africa for your products, or do you have to import a lot?
So I think that's the funnest part of my job now is I go all over the world to little farms, meeting people everywhere and finding the best of the best. A lot of the time it is in South Africa, so there's nothing better for me than going to our little pecan farm, taking my kids there, and we get our pecans so fresh. They come off the tree, we get them delivered. So if you eat our pecan pebbles, they probably just come off the tree. And our honey, our South African honey is incredible, and so whatever we can get locally is always best. And then all the little ingredients, you know, from the mint from Italy, the matcha from Japan, the licorice from France, you know. So wherever is the best, I will get
you
it from
got
there.
It. Mm. Fantastic. So now with Rosh Hashanah coming up, what's going to be on your dessert table?
So my dessert table is going to be totally apple themed. Red apples and green apples. Only apples. So for the Ulala confectionery for our Rosh Hashanah this year, we've got red apple with tart tatin marshmallows enrobed in chocolate. Mm. And then we've got green apple and cinnamon marshmallows also enrobed in chocolate. Yes. So we do that in milk and in dark if it needs to be paru. Right. Exactly. And the red apple caramels are actually my best thing of the season. I absolutely love them. So we're doing those. And we're doing the nougat, which is apple and honey. And then I would pair that with an apple sorbet and a tart tatin and an apple pie. And really do. And also we have Ulla does this great creme de praline. It's in a tab, which I'll show you.
Yes.
Absolutely delicious. And I actually put that over tart green apples. Pour it over tart green apples.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so very nice.
Now, while I've got you here, let me ask you. Now, somebody wants to make an ice cream, let's say, for argument's sake. The nougat becomes very hard once put in the freezer. Mm.
How do we avoid that? Just chop it up very finely?
Yeah.
What do we do?
It's got to be really chopped up finely and ground up, smashed up really.
Yes.
You can take one of those meat mallets.
Uh-huh, okay.
And put it in a really strong plastic bag.
Yes.
And take all your frustration out on the frozen nougat.
And just freeze it, and then you then put it into your thing. What happens if you melt nougat, let's say, with a little bit of cream? Would that make it more just...
No, because the temperature of the nougat is already set at a high temperature, uh-huh. So it won't be fluid.
Okay.
But other thing to do is one can actually put the nougat in the oven on a low temperature for quite a long time and dehydrate it. And that becomes a crunchy nougat. So we actually do that with one of our dark chocolates. We put little pieces of nougat inside, and that's how we do it. So it goes crunchy.
Almost like honeycomb?
Exactly.
Would you say?
Yeah. Exactly. Honeycomb, okay. But better. So that's a great way to do it if you're not doing it in ice cream. Then you can crumble it over any dessert. But the frozen way is great for the ice cream.
I know that you are very, very creative, and you have to go to your Instagram page. So tell us how we can actually contact you. I know you have a blog site. I know. Just Google Karen Schneid.
So my Instagram is Karen Schneid. And the blog, which I love the blog, which I started a few years ago, it's KarenSchneid.com. And it's just got my passionate stories about it. I think the latest one I did was on
Japan.
Roast chicken, I think chicken.
Oh, we're going to come back to that. roast chicken. Oh, was that? Yes.
And
your recent trip to Paris?
Yes.
And you said to somebody, this is the best chicken that you will ever taste. And he phoned you to say that they've just won an award.
Yes.
So now do you have that recipe?
I do. Well, okay. I have my roast chicken recipe. I do. Yeah. I know theirs as well.
Yes.
But I have an honorary degree in the chicken area for sure.
Okay, good. Okay, so please, we are going now from sweet to savory. So let's talk about a little bit about chicken, okay, because this is going to be one of my yontif dishes.
Well, this should become one of your all-time favorite
every Friday dish.
So, but in my house, besides the restaurants in France, in my house, roast chicken is a staple. My kids love it. My friends love it. It's something it's one of my favorite things to make. So, yes, I make fancy food. I'm a foodie and everything. But for me, there's nothing better than good roast chicken. But you've got to get it right. So this is how you do it. I'm going to tell you how to do it. Right. First of all, you have to choose the best chicken that you can find. I'm not saying you need a breast chicken or a cuckoo de Rennes, which is also as good, but try and find the best. Try and find a free-range chicken. Try and find a good chicken. And I generally look for a bigger chicken because I just feel like they've lived longer and they're a bit more robust.
Okay.
So I'll try to do a bigger and the best chicken. So right, then now you've got your best chicken. Take the chicken, obviously you rinse it and pat it dry. And then I grind salt and pepper all over it, around the outside and in the cavity. I mean, I'm going to tell you this is the most simple recipe, but it's the best.
Okay.
In the cavity of the chicken, so you put the following. You put a lemon, which you've now cut in half. A whole garlic head, which you cut in half lengthways, you know, as if you've got a little lid in the bottom.
Right.
And without peeling it, forget peeling, don't worry. Just cut it as it is, and then take a good big bunch of rosemary. One can also use thyme, but interchangeably, but they're different flavors, but I like them both. And then you alternate. You put the half the lemon, half the garlic, and the rosemary, and then you alternate again. The rest, the other half of the lemon, the other half of the garlic, the other half of the rosemary, and you take kitchen string, and you tie up the legs so that you're going to have that flavor stay in, and you put it backside down in your pan, uncovered, no oil, nothing, and you put it in the oven on about 180 to 200 for about an hour, depending on the size of your chicken.
Right.
And that is it. And you take it out and you have to let it rest because chicken, if you cut it immediately, it hasn't really finished cooking. The juices haven't flown out. But you let it rest for a bit, and that is the best chicken in the whole world, I promise.
How simple. Lemon, garlic, and rosemary.
That's it.
Salt and pepper.
That's it.
And does it come out crispy on the outside?
Perfect. It is the most. It's the crispiest chicken on the outside,
yes.
Tender inside, and flavorsome. It is the best roast chicken. I promise everyone.
Okay, guess what family are getting tonight?
what they do in France, they at the restaurant, they actually use a mixture between duck and goose fat, and they get it boiling, and they pour that over during the cooking process. So I've done that as well,
yes.
And it's actually amazing,
yeah.
But it's unnecessary. I've worked it up.
Okay, so tell us now a little bit. I've got to pick your brain. What is your decor going to be like for Rosh Hashanah? Because I know you are incredible when it comes to presenting food and entertaining. I mean, you change your whole house to look like. I mean, you've got to look at the Instagram pictures. You've got to go and
you'll see Versailles.
You will.
You'll see the
whatever you want to see. You'll see Russia. You'll see everything. Okay.
So Rosh Hashanah, actually, this year, I was really inspired by a dishcloth, actually, let me tell you.
Okay.
So, but it's not exactly a dishcloth. Well, I have a lot of them in my house. I love them. It's called a torchon. In France, they have these kind of very thick linen, just off-white cloths with red woven stripes down the side.
Beautiful.
And I love them. So they're all over my house. And I was actually in France now collecting a whole lot more. And I've done green apples then in the past, but the red apple, when I was doing photos now with the marshmallows, and I had the cloth there and the dark red apple and the basket, it just looked so beautiful. So I'm going like a little bit more rustic French, red apple, baskets, linen cloths, cinnamon, things like that.
Oh, you know. Wonderful. Mm. Sounds amazing.
Like apple.
Do you do nuts or do you do lunches?
Nuts.
Do my first nut, get it all done, and that's the nutshell.
I love the evenings. And our house, we've got lots of fireplaces in our house.
Absolutely
love it. I love candles and fireplaces. So the minute I light my candelabra, which I've been collecting for years, candelabra, fireplaces going. Actually, we could even get takeaways. It would be good.
Well, I promise you in your house, I'm sure they don't want takeaways. Well, Karen, it's been so lovely chatting to you. And I actually can't wait to make all these wonderful recipes and use your beautiful confectionery. And I look forward to a good yontif, and I look forward to hearing about more awards.
Thanks, Sharon. And I actually just bought your book from Nussbaum, so I'll be lying in bed reading it.
There's a couple of apples on the cover of that too. With my Rosh Hashanah table.
There's not a cookbook in the world I don't have. That was staring at me in Nussbaum, so we had to take that home.
And thank you for joining us.
Thank you, listeners,
I have a little question. What question can we ask them? Because I have got the most magnificent hamper here that Karen has so generously given us, of all her wonderful sweets and candy and peanut brittle, whatever.
Especially for
Rosh Hashanah. Especially for Rosh Hashanah. And so what can the question be? Let's see. What did Karen say this year was going to be all about? And I'm sure most of you will be able to get that answer, because if we think Rosh Hashanah, we think honeys and... Okay, so give me a ring or send an SMS on 34519. And our very lucky winner will be contacted as soon as an SMS comes through.
An army marches on its stomach, and so does a community. Join Sharon Lurie Tuesdays at 11 a.m. for the Chai FM Cooking Corner. Come hungry.
Welcome back to the Cooking Corner. I'm Sharon Lurie, the Kosher Butcher's wife, and we've been having a lot of fun in studio because we've already got a winner. Yes, Janine Bloch. Well done. So you're going to be collecting your hamper from the Chai FM studios soon. And as Karen said, this year she was inspired by quote-unquote dishcloths and apples. And I must say that this year I was inspired by, I think her name is Annie Leonard. I know that, you know, it, on everybody, on the tip of everybody's lips and mouths these days is reduce, reuse, and recycle. And these are very, very important words. And she said, use it up, wear it out, make it do, or do without. So I'm going to be using up old green. I've been collecting wine bottles for the last year, and I'm going to be putting, I think, some Proteas or something like that, something lovely and tall, into my wine bottles, which we've cleaned and recycling or reusing or whatever you want to say. And we are going to, what else are we going to be doing? Lots of apples. And in fact, while I'm on the subject of apples, I think I've got a little bit more time. Okay, I can share a refreshing apple and cranberry compote with you, which is, you know, yes, I love puddings and whatever, but as I've been saying over the last couple of weeks, people just want fruit, sorbet, an ice cream, something like that. And after a heavy meal, why not try some refreshing apple and cranberry compote? So you will need 1.5 liters of cranberry apple juice. Now, I think it's Sir Juice or Mr. Juice, one of them. They do a 1.5 liter bottle of cranberry apple. You'll also need a packet of 500 grams of dried apples. You just want the dried apple rings. That's all you want. You don't need all the other fruit because we're making it all about the apples this year. 100 grams of, which is like basically a packet of dried cranberries. 2 sticks of cinnamon, or if you don't have 2 sticks of cinnamon, you can use 2 teaspoons of dried cinnamon. 250 grams of pitted prunes. If you like prunes, you can add a bit more. If you're having more people, then you can add more apples, more prunes. And you'll need 1 heaped tablespoon of custard powder. My late mother's trick. Custard powder dissolved in 1 cup of orange juice. Now, if you want it, you can use apple juice as well. Then instead of the orange juice, then you'll also need 1 cup of blueberries. You can get lovely fresh blueberries at the moment, just to decorate with some mint leaves. And all you do is you place the cranberry juice, the dried apples, the cinnamon sticks, and the cranberries, the dried cranberries, into a bowl. And you just allow that to soak overnight in the refrigerator with sealed with some Glad wrap or whatever. Okay, and the apples will sort of puff out and get lovely and rehydrated. And then you place the saucepan onto medium heat and you put the cranberry juice and the apples and everything into the pot to boil. And once it's boiling, you reduce it to a simmer and then you add the prunes. Because I find if you add the prunes too early, they go really... they're not very pleasant. They just sort of mush out like simmers. So you reduce it to a simmer, you add the prunes, and you just allow this to simmer for about 5 or 6 minutes, just prunes to puff out and everything to sort of warm up. And then you will then add your custard powder, which has been dissolved in orange juice, and slowly add that to your apples and your cranberries and your prunes, and slowly stir it because you don't want to break up those beautiful apples and cranberries and prunes. And you just slowly add the orange juice with the custard in until it just starts to thicken and will just thicken slightly. And then you remove it from the heat You allow it to cool, and then just before serving, get it really nice and cold. So you can make it 2-3 days in advance. And just before serving, decorate it with some blueberries and mint leaves, and there you have a lovely, fresh dessert. After the break, another recipe.
An army marches on its stomach, and so does a community. Join Sharon Lurie Tuesdays at 11 a.m. for the Chai FM Cooking Corner. Come hungry.
Okay, so I think I have just a few more minutes to share a quick recipe with you. So we've got a lovely chicken recipe from Karen, which we tried. We had last week, Thursday night. It was absolutely delicious. You can also, as she said, crispy on the outside and moist in the middle. Just follow her instructions and you're good to go. So it's the lemons, the garlic and rosemary, and you'll have a wonderful chicken. So let's get on to some easy breezy onion brisket. You'll need, I would say, about a 2.5 to 3 kilo brisket. Don't forget, leave that flap of fat on while you're cooking your brisket. It's very important to leave that on because it keeps that brisket moist. Afterwards, take it out, let it cool. You can put it in your fridge. Okay, then you can cut that piece of fat out or cut it off the top and slice it up and put it back into the gravy. But while cooking, keep that fat on. You'll need also one bottle of caramelized onions. Now, you can either make your own onions, which is quite easy to do. So you'll just need about 3 onions sliced up, and you add about 1/4 cup of sugar to it, or maybe a little bit more. And you cook them until they go lightly brown. Or you can get the bottled caramelized onions, I think, from Woolworths. They're kosher. You can, and then you'll also need 1/2 cup of sweet chili sauce, 1/2 cup of chutney. Now, you can use the onion chutney, because if we're making it an easy breezy onion brisket, then use the onion chutney, which is also available at Willie's. And or if you haven't got onion chutney, use whatever you have, because you've got enough onion, believe me, when once you've done this recipe, to keep you going. So you'll need 3 onions as well, cut in half and finely sliced. So it's a lot of onions. So you fry the onions until limp, or just not quite brown yet, but just until they're soft. And brown the brisket, or if you're going to use a raisin rib, just as good, just as delicious. You brown the brisket or the raisin rib, and then you place the onions into a roasting pan, followed by the beef, caramelized onion, chili sauce and chutney. You cover it and you roast it low and slow on 160 for about 4 to 5 hours. Now remember, if it falls apart while you're cutting it, don't worry, you can always turn it into pulled beef. It's also delicious. Do I have 1 more minute to share another quick recipe? No, I don't. Okay, so you know what? What can I say? All I can say is thank you so much for listening. Please, God, a wonderful, good, healthy year for all. And remember, it's the eat and meet that makes this show complete.